At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 109 of the Jaguars on SI podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. John, speaking of Tua, I got two questions for you. An easy first one and then a more difficult follow-up.
I am not first, a crook.
That's my answer.
Have you watched Giants offseason Hard Knocks?
I've just seen the clips so far. The clips have been pretty interesting.
Yeah, the clips have been interesting.
I've came away deeply unencouraged by the general manager, but and also one aspect, do you think so? You know how like they tweeted out his like phone call with Saquon to tell him he was going to be a free agent?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Saquon had any idea that was being filmed and recorded for TV?
Oh, probably not. Like, they probably recorded a phone call, and then like if Saquon like said something that like wasn't great for cameras, then maybe they would have just scratched it, but. Yeah, no, I don't think they gave him the heads up.
That's pretty awkward, right? Like, I would just straight up not take phone calls. Like, I'd move like Tony Soprano. Like, you talk to me in person. We're not. Yeah, you talk to him in person. He's going to talk to me. We're not going to talk on the phone. I'm definitely not going to talk to you.
Right. It's not the kind of thing you're going to do over text or email. So you got to hear the person's voice. And so I like your strategy of just turning off the cell phone. Come find me. But one of the clips, I haven't watched it either. The clips have been good, so I think I'm going to sit down to. But one of the clips that I thought was cool was Malik Nabers doing his interview at the NFL Combine with the Giants, and he was saying that he hates losing more than he loves winning, which I can definitely relate. But do you relate? I guess is my first question.
Or you relate to that?
Yeah.
What do you hate losing in pickleball? Like,
yeah, I mean just anything.
Oh, pickleball. Do I relate to that? Okay, I think so. Do I relate to that? Go on.
Okay,
come on with it.
I can be a competitor even if I'm not a professional athlete. Yeah, I played pickleball yesterday, and I happened to win a tournament. And then when I was driving home, I just felt like content and like okay, like that was fun. But then if I drive home after losing, then like I'm irate the whole drive home and I have to like calm myself down a little bit. Anyway.
I like that. Pickleball's fun. I'll be honest. I didn't know you played pickleball. I was just doing a stereotype, but pickleball's
fun. That's fair. Well, I played a lot of tennis and ping pong in high school. And so now with this pickleball wave, I'm kind of well equipped for it. So it works
you didn't
out.
Need to tell me, you didn't need to tell me you played a lot of ping pong in your life.
Our
first meeting, I got that.
If there's a ping pong table back in the Jag Stadium, then I'm challenging you, and you'll see. Anyway, there's been two kind of developments with the pod. I don't know if developments is the right word. News with the pod in the past week. One is that Greg Rosenthal gave us and you a shout out on Meeting Times podcast, which is maybe the coolest thing ever. Because
it was the daily NFL pod. I apologize to Greg. It was the Around the NFL podcast now is NFL Daily.
Right. That's what it's called. Yeah. So, and it was with Mina, but it's a big deal because they're both of them, but especially Greg is like just a pillar of NFL podcasting and a legend in the industry. And so for him to recognize you in the pod was pretty fantastic. But then on the flip side, you kind of got crushed a little bit in our draft that we did with Goodall last week. I mean, I think I should have pulled up the final tallies, but I think I got like 60-70% of votes. Zach got 20 or 30, and you got like 10% or something like that.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I'm skeptical about the results.
Oh, okay. We agreed. I bet on myself. I was like, no, the votes are going to count this time. And you see why I called a popularity contest. You literally got a shout out from Greg Rosenthal. Like, come on now.
Were you buying votes?
No.
Were you going to cemeteries and looking up dead names and putting those down as Twitter accounts?
Oh, that's messed up, John. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't mess up the integrity of the game.
That's how the mob got Kennedy voted in, according to the Irishman. I watched that a few days ago, so that made me think that you did that.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so my question to you is, did it feel worse losing by so much in the team AFC draft that we did last week on the pod, or did it feel better getting that cool shout-out from Greg?
Well, I don't really think I lost. I think people were just wrong. Oh, I'm sorry. They didn't vote with their brains. They didn't vote with their brains or vote with their hearts. So
I was telling you, man, like the fact that you didn't get CJ Stroud or Trevor Lawrence like really set you back. And the funny thing is that we gave Zach the first pick and you were like, Gus, you know what? I feel good about this. You can take Trevor Lawrence the second pick. And so like you did it to yourself, man.
I thought people would realize I built the 85 Bears on defense and the offense is more than good. Somebody was like, that offensive line's gonna get you killed. It's the best one of the three. And my,
it was the best one of the three, but it was still a fine line. And you had Jonathan Taylor and Anthony Richardson, so that's a cool run game.
You know what killed me?
What killed you?
I think the only Jaguar starter I had on offense was Mitch Morse. Like, Goodall took eight of them, so roughly. So.
Yeah.
Wasn't exactly my fault. So I'm like, what do y'all want me to do? Pick Luke Farrell?
Yeah.
Somebody replied and they were like, GM at Team C really hates the Jags offense. What are you talking about, dude? Watch how the draft plays out. Watch the episodes.
We still got the Texans offense to worry about.
Also, my second point, I feel like if they watched the episode instead of just voting,
I was about to say that.
And saw my process, maybe I would have gotten 12% of the votes. But I concede, you destroyed me, Gus. You wrecked me, and you proved that maybe these polls are biased by putting my propaganda machine behind them. So I'm excited to put our names on the next one.
It's been a lot of load balls, I feel like, this offseason. I haven't been buckyballed personally, maybe once or twice. I got buckyballed last week, but yeah, it's been a good offseason for me. But it's been a nice and slow offseason in general, and so slow enough that you've been putting out a top 25 list of the best Jaguars, just most talented Jaguars on the current roster. So as you explained it to me, it would be like who would have the highest Madden rating almost.
Yeah.
So not necessarily most important or most valuable, just the best players. And so you currently have players 25 through 18 out right now in separate articles, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I have 25 through 18, 17 through 1 are going to come. I am doing a most important list, which is like slightly different. Like you'll have players who are like in the 20s, like in the top 10 on there, like,
okay.
Just because maybe a player isn't one of the best players on the team, he's still relatively, you know, important, etc. Like Mitch Morse will be on the top 10 list in some form or fashion, and nobody thinks he's one of the 10 best players on the team, no matter what an upgrade he is. But yeah, no, it's my first year doing the series. I've enjoyed doing it so far. I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see what people think about how my top five checks out.
I'm excited too. I'm excited for the whole rest of the top 17 to come out, because it's been interesting because you start off the list with Logan Cook at 25, and then there's a decent amount of newcomers, but yeah. Should we just go?
Yeah, let's just get there. So Logan Cook, the only player on the list whose positional value is going to be factored in for. Otherwise, it's not factored in at all, but I don't know. I feel like you like selfishly have to do it with the punter a little bit.
Oh, sure.
He
deserves a spot on the list.
The entire article is like saying how he's one of the best punters in AFC, but I don't know. I feel like the 20s is where punters, like if you're like the 2013 Jaguars, Logan Cook's probably like top 12. But like if you're a relatively adult, semi-normal team, I feel like the 20s is a good range for a good punter. And Logan Cook's a good punter, man.
Oh, absolutely. Objectively. And he has been for a long time. There's definitely not as much volatility with punting as there is with kicking. But it's still been good to see that Logan Cook has been consistently good throughout his career.
For sure. So last year he ranked 21st in total punts, but he ranked 11th in punts down inside the 20-yard line. So almost like half his punts were being down inside the 20. His 47.5% rate of punts inside the 20 was third in the NFL, and he was only 19% in touchback rate. He had four touchbacks all year. So he's gotten really good at, like, not booming the ball, like, you know, through the end zone and stuff, and actually, like, set. Like, I thought he was a big reason the defense was having some success in that first half of the season. Mm-hmm. He was setting them up in some great field position, and that Saints game especially.
I feel like we've talked about that a little bit, of how special teams will set up a certain side of the ball. And we mostly have talked about, I feel like, with Jamal Agnew being able to kind of, like, bring some juice to the offense by just having a big return, even if it's not a touchdown, just getting across midfield or even across a 30 or 40 is a big deal. And so, as you're saying, on the flip side too, like, Logan Cook can definitely do good things for the defense. And yeah, he's gotten so good at just pinning teams within the 20. I feel like we've been like fans of, like, gunners on the team for a few years now, jokingly, like Daniel Thomas, we talked about for a while. Chris Claybrooks, we were big fans of before he left the team, but
big fans of his gunner ability.
Make that exactly. But yeah, like, they're part of the reason we're able to shout out the Gunners is because Logan Cook has been so good for so long. And so I definitely think he deserves to be on the top 25. And so I think number 25 is fine. But my only question is Ross Matisic a top 17 player, or is that just like your special teams player for the list? Because Matisic did make the Pro Bowl last year.
That is the special teams player for the list.
Okay, that's fair.
Matisic was not a flop.
Was he under consideration? Was he an honorable mention just off the list? Or
I have not thought about him as a player since the season ended until the second. So no.
All right, that's fair.
The long snapper bias. Long snappers are used to it. He's a really good long snapper, but yeah, there's a long snapper bias. I barely think the people who kick the balls count as players. No, he's a really good player, but no, Logan Cook will be the only specialist on there.
Okay. I think both of those are fair.
No, too high, too low, or is the soup just right?
I think just right, because I think just Logan Cook should have been on the list. And as you were saying earlier, like, I think the 20s is fair. Even if he was, like, the greatest punter of all time, which I don't know if anyone even owns that title, I feel like he would be, like, only, like, a top 15 player rather than a top 5 player. So, yeah, the 20s
probably is Ray Guy.
Fair. Ray Guy.
Yeah. Is that a new name for you?
I feel like it rings a bell, but I, like, couldn't tell you anything about him. Did he play for the Raiders?
I think so, but I don't know. They named the punting award after him, and I know he was supposed to be a renowned punter.
Well, he did play for the Raiders.
I'm pretty sure he's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's in the Hall of Fame. So, move on to number 24. Number 24 was left guard Ezra Cleveland. Gus, let me know that one. Is that too high, too low, or just right? The reason I had him there is, yeah, obviously last year he dealt with some injuries. He moved around a little bit, but ultimately, his 2023 numbers aren't awful. He was 19th out of 50 eligible guards in terms of rate. So he was like a top 20 left guard basically last year. So I feel like he's at least deserving to be, you know, on the list. I'm not sure if the ceiling is that much higher than like top 20, top 15 left guard, but I feel like he's at least deserving to be around this range.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit too low, honestly. I'm buying Ezra Cleveland stock this offseason, because when he came over from Minnesota, like, when the news first broke, I thought, okay, like, he's probably mid at best, but more so just like a solid body to have for depth. But then I watched the Vikings film and I thought, wow, he's actually not a game changer, but arguably a plus starter. And like, I thought definitely just a viable starter in Minnesota. And then he wasn't quite that in Jacksonville, but I think a lot of that has to do with an injury that he had last year, as well as just having to get acclimated to a new team and a new offensive line and new teammates in the middle of the offseason, or in the middle of the season, especially when there was like struggles at center to the right of him, and then kind of a lot of moving pieces at left tackle to the left of him. And so I think that there's a real shot that with like a full offseason with the team, with some time to gel with Mitch Morse and whoever's going to start at left tackle, and then just time to recover from his injury as well. Like, I think he could end up being a little bit of a steal from that trade, and people will look back on that trade with a little bit more positivity or whatever. And so I think if I were making a top 10 or whatever list of most important Jaguars, he might be on it for me, because I think for pretty much everyone else, the offensive line, like, if they stay healthy, you don't really have any question marks about them, or at least any, like, any strong, any questions about them, really. But for Cleveland, I feel like he's, like, the one potential weak link on the offensive line. And the O-line is kind of like the defense as a whole, where it's more about not having a weak link than it is having, like, one or two superstars. And so as long as Cleveland isn't able to be that weak link and is able to kind of, like, take that next step this season like I expect him to, then I think he could be a lot higher on the list at this time next year. So with that said, like, I do think the range that he's in right here is pretty fair. Like, I would have just made him, like, maybe the 21st or 22nd player rather than 24th.
That's fair. That's probably fair. I mean, I will say, like, I agree with you, like, in terms of importance, the offensive line staying together. But I see that as more of, like, a unit thing than maybe, like maybe the one guy I think they can't afford to get hurt, like, if you had to pick one, is maybe Morse. Like, you can afford Cam or Anton because you have Walker Little. Maybe you can't afford Walker Little because then if somebody else gets hurt, you're screwed. So maybe Walker Little is actually the hipster answer. We're talking about Ezra Cleveland. Phil Rauscher at the media roundtable last month said, I mean, for Ezra to Cleveland to come in, we traded for him as a guard. And then on a Wednesday, us go, hey, you're going to play left tackle against Myles Garrett. And he was like, okay. And then Blake Cantz, you're going to go in there as soon as he gets hurt and go play. And, like, that's hard. Now, do we need to get better? You damn right we do. You know what I mean? That's a profession we've chosen. We got to play the best football we can and try to win the championship. But at the end of the day, we just got to keep on rolling. So, yeah. Well, that's like saying, like, you know, Cleveland came in already injured and then was put to a pretty, you know, overall crappy situation. Rauscher also, I didn't include it in that story, but had a great quote about how he was like, his first 2 years in Jacksonville, basically the left guard was like the what the hell are we going to do position. And he feels more secure going into a season with Ezra at left guard than he's probably felt the last two seasons. Like, one going in with Ben Bartsch in 2022. And then last year, not really knowing who the left guard is going to be because Ben Bartsch has come back from injury. Tyler Shatley obviously had his scary AFib situation. So definitely a different feeling around the left guard position right now, I think. So maybe that's a bit of a testament to him. All right, next name, number 23. Tell me, too high, too low, just right. I had Roy Robson Harris. And I could see this being, like, a little too low. Like, he's had some, like, legit flashes. Like, he had an all-time performance in 2022 against the Chargers. He had, I think, four tackles for loss that game. And in the final five games that year, he had three sacks, seven tackles for loss, and eight quarterback hits. And he's, like, one of, like, a handful of interior defensive linemen who have put together, like, that kind of stretch. Now, that's obviously been, like, the ceiling, the absolute flash. You haven't seen that, I think, week in and week out. But he was still, like, for an interior defensive line group that struggled to get after the quarterback, he was still far and away the best pass rusher. Like, just looking at the numbers on the film, he can make some impact plays in the backfield. I feel like this is a decent range for him.
Yeah, I think this is just right. Like, as you were saying, the consistency is kind of the thing with him, where he really turned it up at the end of the 2022 or 23 season. But then in the run game especially, like, sometimes he can kind of be put on skates and is less reliable there. But I feel like the best interior pass rusher is more of an indictment on the team than anything else. But, like, he's certainly shown flashes. And so I wonder if we've talked so much about how Eric Armstead's presence is going to help out Josh Hines-Allen and Trayvon Walker this offseason. And so I wonder how much it's going to be able to help out Roy Robertson Harris and, like, Mason Smith and kind of the backup types as well, with, like, not just so much attention being set on Armstead and Walker and Hines-Allen, but just, like, the fact that they're probably going to kill this offseason, assuming that they all stay healthy. Like, I think that, like, seeing those guys produce and play well is going to be motivating for Roy Robertson Harris and, like, the rest of the D-line and the rest of the defense, really. But it wouldn't shock me if he's another guy that like might be a few points up higher on this list this time next year. But for now, I do think it's like a fair ranking.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. And hey, kudos to you on the smoothness of the Hines Allen.
Yeah, you like that? That was the first time. I definitely thought I was going to butcher it.
I've had to gas myself a few times. Happy for him. That's obviously a really cool thing. All right. Player number 22. I think this is the most controversial one so far. I got a couple of different replies to it. Number 22 is Walker Little. Huh? Too high?
I think he's too low, man. Too low.
Yeah.
Are other people saying he's too high?
Yeah. I had people like saying, like, why is a backup on there? Which
the Jags keep three starting caliber tackles in our team. That's why. So
I factored in his role a little bit. That's why he's at not higher. But talent wise, I think he's gotta be up there. That first month of the season, granted, it's only a 4-game stretch, but he obviously played well in 2022. In the first 4 games last year, he was tied for 6th among 49 tackles with at least 100 snaps and pressures allowed. He only had 5 pressures allowed in the first 4 games last year. The only tackles to allow fewer pressures in that span were Trent Brown, Trent Williams, Bahard Ryman, Tristan Wirfs, and Panay Sewell. So pretty good company to be in. You know, obviously his season kind of went downhill once he got moved to guard and then got hurt. His season kind of went downhill. It was kind of obvious he wasn't 100% the rest of the year, and then it also became kind of obvious that he's not really a guard either. So he kind of had a lost season after he got taken out of the lineup. But I think the numbers just show, like, throughout his career when he plays, I mean, he's a good player. So Rauscher again on the round table had some really good quotes. There's a couple here, so I'm gonna just read them all off. Said Walker's played well, and Walker's a damn good football player. And, you know, you sit there and you're in my seat and you say, well, I got 3 really good tackles. You know what I mean? And you sit there and you're in Walker's seat or Cam's seat or Anton's seat, and you're like, shit, really good tackles here. One of us isn't going to be able to play. But the reality is they're all going to play at some point, somehow, some way. That is the reality of what the NFL is, and we're lucky for that. He then went on to say, Walker's got good tape. But at the end of the day, I'm sure he'll be rewarded for what he's put on tape. It's not hard to coach Walker. Walker does exactly what you ask him to do, and he does it really, really well. And I think Walker understands the importance of this season to his personal life in terms of, like, where the contract and different things go. And then, you know, he was kind of asked about, well, isn't Walker basically a backup? And he said, pull it up. Sorry, my computer's being weird. All right. He said, and coaches said this, and, you know, perception is like, you know, the tackle positions are locked up, but, like, we're in a spot where the depth chart is open. And, you know, we got to play the best 5, however that plays out. Walker's played a lot of positions for us since he's been here, and that maybe hasn't been fair to him. You know what I mean? Like, he's been the guard, he's been there, he's been here, and it's been like, hey, do this, do that. And he's, you know, every time he said, okay, and he goes out and he does it the best that he can. So now that he can kind of put himself on one spot and let's go. Let's go compete. Let's go see where we're at and see how that plays out. So obviously a lot to digest there, but to me it's him saying, like, I think Walker and the team both know this is a big year for him to potentially get a bag, wherever that may be. He's openly admitting that Walker's basically been screwed over, like, in the first 3 years of his career, like, not being settled into one spot. And does it seem like he's kind of opening a door to maybe there's a little, like, maybe it's not 100% sure thing Cam Robinson starts the left tackle?
That's what it sounded like to me. I feel like I've, like, heard whispers of that, but then to hear, like, Rauscher say it publicly, just like, to not obviously they said, like, there's going to be a competition, but he didn't not say that there's going to be a competition. And I feel like that's where you can, like, kind of pick up a lot of things from coach speak. And so I think you're right. I think he opened the door, especially, like, talking about the most eye-opening quote from, like, any of these articles that I saw was, like, just how Rauscher was saying that Little knew how important this season is for him. Because, like, I think if you do this list next year and Walker's on the team, he'll definitely be higher ranked, but he might not be on the team to be higher ranked. And so it'll be, like, that's definitely, even though I think Ezra is potentially, like, the X factor of the line, just because everyone else will be should be solid, assuming good health. Then like the, just the situation of left tackle with both tackles being like, not necessarily one is way better than the other. And then both tackles being on the final year of their contracts is definitely going to be an interesting storyline to follow through the whole season.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I love the Ezra Cleveland as the X Factor take. You've gotten much better at the ratcheting up. That one, that blows my hair back. That's, I love
it. You like
I
that love one? That.
I'm proud of you. Now,
I feel like I still think that Walker is still too low. And I think that just recency bias has a lot to do with it, because last year he tried to make the position change and then he was all in there for all of six snaps before he got injured. And then I don't think we saw him again after the injury. But then compare that to two off seasons ago when he put together a great performance against the likes of Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack in the playoff game against the Chargers. And like at that point, it was like Walker Little is clearly good, and like he could hypothetically be around for the next decade plus with our quarterback one. So it's interesting now, and I feel like the like lack of physicality by not just the offensive line but the offense in general last year, like people are kind of clamoring for Cam Robinson to start 17 games again because he definitely has like that mean streak and that competitiveness to him. But I think Walker is probably. It's tough because experience definitely matters a lot in the league,
sure. Especially
at left tackle. So I'll stop at comparing him to Cam Robinson, but I think Walker is like a top 20 player on the team.
Give me a number. How many games Walker starts at left tackle and how many Cam starts at left tackle this year? Because I agree with Rauscher. I think at some point Walker's going to play. Like it's the NFL. Like very rarely do you see both offensive tackles play like 100% of the snaps. Like at some point Walker's going to play.
I'll say Cam Robinson plays 10 games or okay. Starts 10 games, and then that leaves Walker Little with 7 starts.
It was interesting how Rauscher mentioned Anton being like, oh, wow, there's 3 tackles here. Like, nah, Anton doesn't got shit to worry about. It's very clear that Walker is a left tackle, right?
Yeah, so that'll be interesting too, is that like there's also been whispers that like Anton could move back to his college position at left tackle, and then the Jags would like, because I think there's like one scenario is that the Jags keep either they re-sign either Cam Robinson or Walker Little after this offseason, and then one of those two is like the long-term left tackle, Anton stays as a long-term right tackle. But then I think there's also a scenario where if the team doesn't get as good tackle play as they want out of Walker Little and Cam Robinson, or maybe they don't get as good tackle play out of Cam Robinson as they want, and then Walker Little, maybe they just get priced out of in free agency, then I think that if both of those guys leave, I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville's plan is to move Anton to left tackle and then maybe draft a tackle or a right tackle in the first round. Like we've said how like Tyson is still unsigned, and so like as of now the expectation is cornerback round one, but you get a lot of
it'd be such a good bit, dude.
Yeah, like, pigeonholing themselves into this like first round obvious need every single offseason, and so yeah, that's the
same. I mean Trent Baalke said it after the season ended in his end of season press conference that, you know, he absolutely believes Anton could play left tackle, and you know Baalke, the only person that's a bigger Anton fan than you and I are probably, you know, it's probably Trent. So I 100% believe that they'd be comfortable with him playing left tackle one day. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. All right, let's move to number 21, Gus. The only rookie on the list at all, Brian Thomas Jr. It felt weird ranking him because he hasn't played a game yet. So right. I'm mostly going off traits and like his like last year of tape from LSU, but I don't know, man. The size, the speed, the explosiveness, the smoothness, the ability to generate big plays. I feel like 21 is a reasonable place for, like, the number 23 pick. Like, you expect the first-round pick to be one of those, like, top 20-ish players, even as a rookie, right?
Yeah, I think this is a fair spot of keeping – of, like, almost similar to Logan Cook, where, like, you got to make sure he's on the list. But, I don't think he necessarily has to be too high. And I feel like – this is also fair because I feel like he would have put him around 21 or at 21 after the draft, and then like probably would have just stayed the same through the offseason, right? With based on like what we've seen from, with padless practices. And so I think it's a fair ranking, not to be a broken record, but obviously he could jump up in the rankings this time next year. But I feel like he's also a player that could, like, I mean, knock on wood, but like just not be on the rankings at all. And so he's definitely volatile in that regard, and that, like, who knows like what his rookie season will be, especially because like I wouldn't be surprised if he's immediately the most talented receiver on the Jags roster.
Physically, yeah.
Christian Kirk is pretty underrated. But at the same time, like, he's only going to be number three or four in the pecking order from day one. And so, like, it's going to be easier said than done to, like, really climb the depth chart and, like, truly make a name for himself as a rookie.
The best for Brian Thomas isn't going to be in 2024. I think that's fair to say, right? Like, even, like, in, like, the best case scenario, like, he's going to get better, one, as he gets more experience and grows. And then, two, his role's going to expand in the future compared to what it is this year. And they, in my opinion, they're going down the right path. Like, you know, like having your rookie receiver being like a number three or number four option as opposed to putting the entire passing game on him, especially for his like profile as a receiver. I think that's probably, you know, the right thing for him, because you can still make his touches and targets super valuable on based on how you deploy him. But now I said in the article, like, he's somebody who could easily leap like 10 spots next year. If he's not in the top 25 at all next year, that'd be cause for concern, I think. You could see a scenario where that happens.
I'm only saying that because it's a rookie who we've never seen play a regular season game. It doesn't have anything to do with Brian Thomas. It's just that.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's someone that hasn't played. But yeah. Number 20.
Moving on, number 20. Yes, sir. Ronald Darby. He was a weird one to place because he's still playing really well, but obviously this is projecting for 2024 and he's older. But among 61 cornerbacks last year with at least 30 targets in coverage, he ranked number 11th in passer rating against, number 2 in yards per attempt allowed, number 9 in completion rate against, and tied for number 4 in yards allowed per coverage snap. He was pretty freaking good for Baltimore last year. And I think, at least from seeing him physically, he can still run. So I think he probably has another season at least until, you know, maybe his body, his speed starts to lose a little bit. I reasonably could have maybe put him a few spots lower, but I feel like with this specific team structure, I feel like this is a decent spot for him.
Yeah, I might have put him a few spots higher out of bias. I feel like I'm saying everyone would be higher though, and so maybe I'd like
make your own list, pal.
Like, full list was available, and I'd be like, oh well, I'd have to move that person down. But yeah, just biased because, like, I think Ronald Darby was really good last year. And, like, people, the nerds, the football nerds will say that there's a really steep drop off for cornerbacks after they turn 30. And, like, yeah, that's true in most cases, but, like, you have to look at each case specifically. And in this case, Ronald Darby was playing like a top 15 or 20 cornerback in the league, let alone player on his own team last season. And so I think, like, he's one that, because of his age, I guess, and because, like, he's clearly more of a short-term fixture than anything, then, like, I guess I could see him dropping more than I could see him rising on next year's list. But for this year's list, I think he's still got it. I think he's a really good player. I would have put him, like, 2 spots higher, but that's just kind of fair. So I think this is a good range.
That's fair. It did become a great. Jesus Christ.
It's early, John. It's a morning.
Yeah, I struggle with pronouncing my R's at any time of the day, my friend. It's a constant battle I deal with every day. Like, whenever Sarah catches me saying something stupid, she, like, repeats it to me. She's like, you said what?
Just let it go, Sarah.
Yeah. Well, with that said, it's been a great bit, the fact that one of the big reasons I thought it made sense for the Jaguars to release Darius Williams was because he was hitting that drop-off stage. And now I'm relatively caping for a dude who's either the same age or older. So they went ahead and blew that theory out of the water. I've still seen people say, like, call Darius Williams, like, a cap casualty. Did it not have, like, $30 million in cap right now? Like, they easily could have kept him, correct?
Yeah, it's just because they see that the Jags saved $11.5 million against the cap by releasing him, but like it's definitely more so just a scheme difference. Because people will say like, oh, cap casualty, and then like they signed or just the $11.5 million in savings, and then Ronald Darby was brought in for a lower cost. So they were like, I think a lot of people just make the assumption that it was a money-based move, but it was definitely a scheme-based move where Darius Williams is like had an even better season than Ronald Darby last year, honestly. But Darius was also like one of the five best zone corners in the league, and he really thrives in off coverage where he can kind of see plays coming to him and like really utilize his route recognition skills and just his play recognition skills and make jumps on the ball. But then Darby is someone that Ryan Nielsen is obviously coveted because of his ability to play press coverage, whether it's man or zone, but just to really be able to live at the line of scrimmage and play physically. And so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. All right, number 19, Antonio Johnson. Is it maybe a little bit of a projection, but I think when the season ends, he'll be higher than this. I think he's going to have a starting role. I think he's going to start at safety, and Savage starts at nickel. Jarian Jones will get on the field some way, somehow, but I think that's their starting, like, defensive back room. And I think Antonio Johnson, like, we've talked a lot about how Nielsen's scheme could be good for Trayvon Walker and Devin Lloyd. I think Antonio Johnson could be the one that's the best for, because Nielsen loves blitzing defensive backs off the edge, safeties, nickels, and Antonio Johnson's fantastic at that. I mean, look at his trip sack against the Browns last year and some of the stuff he did at A&M in college. So I think Antonio Johnson's in a really good spot in the scheme, and he's going to be given the chance this year to play more defensive snaps. So I got him at 19.
Yeah, you sold me. I thought this was the one player that I thought was definitely ranked a little bit too high, and I would have dropped him a little bit. But like I respect you kind of making it a projection and just kind of like you're kind of betting on the player that he was going to be ranked higher next year, especially with, I mean, it's a good point about Nielsen and his blitzes. And I feel like he made Richie Grant look pretty fantastic off the edge last year.
You want me to do the sword?
Oh, okay, the sword is good. I like the sword.
Yeah, what is it? What do we have, actually? We have this.
This seems familiar. I don't know what it is. Maybe just another sword thing. Okay.
This is going to be something else. I'm going to get canceled for it. It's going
to
be.
Yeah, I know. I was like, you're about to do something. You're getting a little bit too close to it.
Icarus flew too close to this song.
Yeah. And so I think you have a good take and you sold me on it, but like, it was just, I feel like we haven't seen a lot of Antonio Johnson, and the few flashes that we've seen have certainly been promising, but like I've been a lot more interested in the flashes that Walker Little has shown over the course of three seasons. And so I would have personally ranked Walker over Antonio Johnson, even if Antonio Johnson will probably get more playing time and end up being higher ranked next year. But yeah, I see the vision.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. I had no retort for that. Like, he reasonably could have been behind Ronald Darby too. But like I said, I'm maybe projecting a little bit, selling high on some of the flashes from last year. All right, number 18, last one we're going to go through before we cut to a break. Mitch Morse. I think he's still, like, you know, you look at, like, the blown block rate stuff, he's, like, top, I think, I want to say he's number 13 last year. So he's, like, probably, like, a top 15 center. Like, he's obviously, like, on the lower end of that, I think. But he's so much better in the running game than Luke Fortner that it obviously serves as a giant upgrade. I feel like this is a good spot for him. He's not, like, the perennial Pro Bowl caliber center that he was in, like, Kansas City or, like, his first year or two in Buffalo. But he's still obviously a good player.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a fair spot for him, like the high teens. It's a little bit tough. You do have a lot of newcomers like in this range, but it's like the right range to include them. And so, I mean, I guess Eric Armstead is going to be higher. I assume you have Gabe Davis somewhere on the list. So I probably would have put Mitch Morse ranked higher than Gabe Davis. But I guess like the age factor is definitely fair, where Morse is kind of like at the end of his prime and Gabe Davis is arguably just entering his prime. And so that one could backfire on me. But, yeah, I think, again, like the biggest question mark for Morse is health, not because of any previous injuries, but simply because of his age and how long he's been in the league. And so I think as long as he's able to start 16, 17 games, then I expect this ranking to be fair by the end of the season too.
I also gave him a boost because he prevented people from mocking JPJ to the Jaguars any longer.
That's fair. One thing I'm interested in seeing from Morse is how often he pulls this offseason, because the Jags have used Sheriff a ton as like their lead guy on like pulling power runs and stuff like that. But now, like, I saw Cleveland do it honestly a lot in Minnesota, and then he did a little bit less in Jacksonville, which I don't know if it was just because he was getting acclimated or because of the injury or what. But now between Sheriff and Cleveland and Mitch Morse, who was pulling a ton for Buffalo last year and just in previous years in general, like, they've got three guys who can, like, go out in space. Four guys, if you include Cam Robinson, who's great at, like, pulling out for screens or just at whatever. And so to have four of your five guys, and, like, not even that Anton is bad at it, but just we haven't really seen it from him. But he's certainly a great athlete. And so it's definitely a very athletic offensive line with a lot of guys that can, like, go out and do different assignments in various gaps and kind of, like, move bodies around. And so I'm interested to see, like, if a healthy season from Cleveland and then, like, the addition of Morse, like, whether that kind of, like, unlocks their scheme in terms of the running game and just, like, protections and different things that they're able to do.
I think Brandon Thorne, like, the offensive line guru guy, I think he like did, like, superlatives. It was like lightest, heaviest offensive lines, etc. And I think the Jaguars are, like, top five in terms of, like, games played, like, they're, like, starting five. So they definitely got a lot of experience, which makes sense. I mean, Cam Robinson's played a ton of games, Mitch Morse played a ton of games, Brandon Sheriff's played a ton of games, Ezra Cleveland's played a couple seasons, and then obviously Anton had his rookie season. So
he's the least experienced, but he's also probably the best lineman, so they're kind of in a good spot in that regard.
100%. All right, guys, we're gonna cut for a quick break and we'll be right back to go over our next segment.
Welcome back to the Jaguars on SI podcast. For our second and final segment, we are just going to go over some players who are recently ranked by ESPN and CBS Sports in their just 2024 positional player rankings. And so we've got Travis Etienne, Evan Engram, Josh Hines-Allen, and Andre Sisco that are ranked by those two media affiliates. And so we're just going to go over where they're ranked and whether we agree or disagree.
I got hype whenever you say Jaguars on SI podcast. It sounds so much better. And now that's naturally, I just let's go.
Yeah.
I thought
they were both fun, though. I'm glad it makes you happy. So Travis Etienne was ranked 10th by ESPN. And ESPN Jeremy Fowler would poll or survey a bunch of anonymous league executives. And so ESPN is kind of like the list, and then CBS Sports was, I don't know if the same guy did all the lists or if they broke it up among the staff, but it's basically just by a CBS Sports staff writer.
That's your guy, Cody Benjamin. 10-10's guy. He's 10-10's guy.
Is he? He could be 10-10. I'm not the company 1010XL 92FM radio.
Wow, you're a company man.
All right, well, Travis Etienne was ranked 10th by ESPN and 11th by CBS. And so what say you, John? Too high, too low, just right?
No, I think 10th is fair. Maybe, like, bump him up maybe a spot or two. Like, his yards per attempt definitely obviously took a nosedive last year. I think that had more to do with what was going on in front of him as opposed to things that he was doing. But I think he's gotten better as a receiver. I think he's, like, you know, he ranked among the best in the entire league at missed tackles forced, yards after contact, those kind of things. He's gotten, I think, a little bit better as a pass blocker. Again, I showed more as a receiver. That touchdown against the Steelers, he wasn't doing, you know, 2 years ago. And I want to say he's in, like, the top six or seven of most rushing touchdowns outside of the 10-yard line. So with, like, five or six. So I personally think 10, that 9 to 10 spot's probably a good range for him, and he can go up again, you know, with another, like if he has another 1,000-yard season, like back to back to back 1,000-yard seasons are hard to kind of, you know, scoff at.
Right. I think I think it's like a fair ranking by like the national folks in that like he did have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons already. But as you said, like the yards per carry kind of dipped last year. And then obviously just the Jags just kind of like limped to the finish line in general as a team. And like not that ETN did too, but ETN like hasn't finished a season fully healthy. And so maybe if he was actually like still crushing it during like fantasy playoffs and stuff like that, or like when media members are voting on awards and stuff. But I think it's fair that he's like ranked right here, but I think at this time next year, he'll be considered more of like a top somewhere between like 5 and 8, because I think like Mitch Morse stabilizing the offensive line and then Brian Thomas adding spacing, I think like just those two additions alone, but then obviously hopefully if ETN himself and then other players on the offense all take a little bit of a step from 1 year to the next, I'm definitely expecting like a Pro Bowl caliber season from him if he plays 14 plus games.
I think the big thing with him is like there's no like glaring hole in his game, right? Like James Robinson, when healthy, was really good, but his flaw was like the long speed. Leonard Fournette, vision and agility. Toby Gerhardt, most things. So when it comes to ETN, like I feel like his vision and pacing could probably be a little better, but there's like he's like across the board at least like good at most things.
Right. I was going to say that I'm glad he said pacing too, because that's definitely a big part of it specifically for him. His vision and pacing has like slowly improved throughout his career, and it's not a detriment, but something that he probably could still keep getting a little bit better at. And then the only other thing I was going to say was the passing game, because he was not a good pass protector at all coming out of college. And now I feel like he's like passable. And then as you said in the pass game, he's definitely improved there and is able to. It's not like he's going to be lined up in the slot or anything like Urban Meyer might have fetishized about. But
he's a slash.
Yeah, he can at least catch a swing pass or like a check down or a screen, and like he does enough in the passing game. It's just that like the passing game and the vision aren't like elite, but like the speed and the tackle breaking, the burst, like he's got some other pretty elite traits. So I think it'll show up this season.
Is it a good thing for him that his foot like snapped in half before he could play it down for Urban? We never got to see like the devilish things Urban had in mind for him.
I guess in a way, but like Lisfranc injuries usually are like not very good. Like it's not.
I'm surprised he's come back as well as he has from that.
Exactly. Like we can say that now in hindsight, but like even if we knew the kind of season that Urban Meyer was going to lead, like I would have been like, yeah, I still don't want the first round running back to have like a possibly career altering injury rather than not. But yeah, again, in hindsight, maybe it was a blessing in disguise.
I would have hit my foot with a hammer.
Okay, moving on to Evan Engram. He was ranked 9th by ESPN and 11th by CBS.
Fans were really pissed off that he was ranked 11th, because like I put it out, I did an article on it, and I was like, agree or disagree, and people were pissed off. I think like seven to 10 range is a good range for him, you know, like, because obviously the Kelsey, Kittle, Andrews trio leads, right?
Right.
Laporta, I think you got to put in front of him.
I would do Kincaid and McBride for young guys.
Yeah. I think Hawkinson's probably more of an argument than people want to believe, but I'd imagine most people in the NFL would take Hawkinson. That's why I like Jeremy. That's why I like this Jeremy Fowler series more than like most listicles, is because like you're actually getting a perspective on. Oh wait, I'm about to sneeze.
Kazintite. Here comes another one. Bless you. Is there a third in store? Oh, there's a third in store, folks. Here we go. Nice. Kazintite. Bless you.
All right. The reason I like Jeremy Fowler's ESPN rankings every year is because he actually polls people in the NFL. Like, he polls up to 80 NFL executives, scouts, and coaches. So it gives you more of an idea of how the NFL sees these guys as opposed to how one singular author is seeing them, which I think is immensely more valuable. Like, I track this Fowler series every year. It's one of my favorite ones to track. I can remember when. So the Jaguars, in all of them so far, they've done running back, defensive tackle, edge rusher, safety, and tight end. At least one Jaguar has been mentioned in every article in some form or fashion, whether they're in the top 10, honorable mention, or received votes. I remember years when it'd be like Josh Allen, and like that was it.
And no one else even received votes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that, it definitely seems like the floor has at least been raised a bit. That's why I like the ESPN one. So I don't know, I feel like it's a relatively fine ranking for Ingram. You can, I think, probably argue for him up a spot or two, but it's nothing I'm offended by.
Yeah, I think I understand if Jaguars fans are a little bit miffed by it, since he led the league or led the position in catches last year, and it was the second most for a tight end in NFL history. I think he finished with 114 catches, and Zach Ertz has the record with 116, which he set under Doug Peterson. But the thing is that, like, even though the Jags put out this graphic or this video the other day of Ingram, and said that he was second in the league among tight ends in yards after the catch. And I quote tweeted it and said, yeah.
You're such a bloody pooper. I saw that. You're such an ass.
What? I wasn't trying to be. Like, that's why I linked D-Rock's article too. But I was saying that I think Bill Barnwell wrote recently that Ingram ranked 103rd out of 104 qualifying tight ends or receivers in average depth of target last year. And then there's also the fact that, like, I feel like a ton of those too are like crossers that are like 4 yards downfield, and like crossers as opposed to just like a button hook or like a curl route or a hitch, which is a big deal because, like, in those routes you kind of have to like stop and then get going again. But the Jags did a good job. I mean, certainly their play calling wasn't perfect last year, but one of the things they did do a solid job was like just making sure that Ingram was kind of on the run most of the times that he was catching the ball. And so that helped the yards after catch numbers too. And so, like, and so what I was trying to say in the tweet was that, like, we shouldn't take anything away from Ingram, but like, because he did the most with what he was asked to do, but like, it's still fair to point to the fact that he was like just a check down option essentially. And that's like, was a huge reason that he got to 114 matches, as well as the fact that obviously Zay Jones had injuries. Calvin Ridley wasn't as consistent as we were hoping for. And then Christian Kirk, like after Christian Kirk's week 13 injury, Evan Ingram just kind of became a target hog for CJ Beathard included. And so I agree with you where I think like the 7 to 10 range is fair. He's definitely a great tight end. In the D-Rock article that I mentioned, he talked to ESPN's Michael Dorako about wanting to become more of a deep threat this season because he feels that he can contribute more. And I understand why he feels that way, since he was just used about 4 yards down the field on average last year. And so I think it's fair for him to be in like ranked 9th and 11th, even after leading tight ends and catches last year, because like the context kind of helps to explain why. But I also think that if the Jags do turn him a little bit loose this offseason or this season, like we saw in week one last year, he had a great catch against the Colts down the sideline in week one. And then I feel like that was like one of his only downfield targets the entire season. And so if he's able to be utilized downfield a little bit more and is able to kind of show that he's a true 3-level receiving threat, because as of now, he's kind of a 1-level receiving threat. I wouldn't be surprised if he found himself in the top 5 next year.
Yeah, 100%. And you're right. The targets, those last 5 games, it went 12 targets, 6 targets, 15 targets, 6 targets, 13 targets. So definitely was getting peppered with him. He only had one game with under 6 targets, and that was the first game of the season. Otherwise, he was like consistently like at least 7 or 8 targets. So I agree with you. And like I said, I agree with the rank. I think Ingram still, even with the caveats, and you weren't really being an ass, by the way. I just like poking fun at you. It just makes me laugh whenever the Jaguars post something nice about a player and you quote retweet it. You're like,
well, actually.
Yeah. No, but I agree with everything you said. Smarter. No, I agree with everything. You didn't say or tweet anything wrong. Like, when you look at the role, like, it definitely was not as – and the role, not Ingram himself, but the role was not as impactful as, like, the catch number would make you think. And I think he's capable of doing more. I mean, he had some – times in 2022 where they would hit seam throws to him, and if it seems like that went away completely last year, you know. So I definitely think he could be used more downfield, and definitely think that he's been, you know, I definitely like a you know, like a breath of fresh air for their tight end position the last 2 years. Like they were a black hole at tight end before him. Like Mercedes, and after Mercedes, it was awful. So definitely has been like a big piece for them. He's been better, I think, than anybody thought he'd be when they first signed him, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty for the Jags, honestly, for kind of like buying well on him after New York, because I'm pretty sure there's reports that Jacksonville wanted to sign him to a multiple year deal. Yeah. And then Engram, like, understandably so, wanted to bet on himself and just wanted to take, I think, like the biggest 1 year deal that he could, within the hopes of like signing an even bigger deal next offseason or the following offseason. And so it kind of worked out both ways, because then Engram ended up getting franchise tagged but signed a long term extension last offseason. And so he got kind of like the big bag that he was looking for. And then Jaguars got the long term fix and like, just good option for their rookie deal quarterback that they were looking for too. And so it's kind of I feel like a win-win for both sides with that free agent pickup.
He'll go down as like probably like a top 15 free agent signing franchise history, right? If not higher.
If not top 10, yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that. All right, who we got next?
Josh Hines-Allen. If you didn't hear the news, previous Jaguars star pass rusher Josh Allen legally changed his name to Josh Hines-Allen to represent and kind of, just represent and show off, I guess, his maternal side of the family's name and just all of the athletes that have been in the family. He's talked a lot, especially in the last year, but even just in general, about how important legacy is to him. And so this is kind of a cool step in that direction, I guess. And there will be some kind of jersey exchange in September for any fans who might be miffed that they have a 41 Allen that says, or a 41 jersey that says Allen instead of Hines Allen. But anyway, Josh Hines Allen was ranked 8th among all NFL pass rushers by ESPN, and he was unranked by CBS Sports on a list of top 20 pass rushers. So
No. They edited it.
They didn't.
Yeah, that's what Fat Tony said.
Are you
Fat
serious?
Tony's not actually fat. Yeah, but yeah, that's
yeah. I never understood that nickname.
Yeah. He's very well put together. Let me find it.
That's
he
crazy.
Said that. That's what I was saying. He's 10-10's guy. Tony was going in on Cody Benjamin when I was in the studio yesterday, man. I guess Hayes said that CBS should put Cody Benjamin in timeout.
Yeah, like the whole station was pretty pissed about it, honestly. And like I kind of get it, because like their guy broke the franchise's single season record last year. He ranked tied for second or maybe tied for third in sacks among all players last year. He's clearly an ascending player. Even if last year was a little bit of a one-off in terms of the sack total, like he's always had the good underlying pressure numbers. He's always been one of the Jaguars' best defender since Calais Campbell left, for sure. And so like, I understand why Jacksonville radio people are like upset that they're like one of the best players on our team isn't getting the recognition that he most certainly deserves. Because I think the 8th rating by ESPN is pretty fair. I think it's almost similar to Engram, where I think he's probably in like the 7 to 10 range. Where I think he doesn't really sniff the top 5, honestly, but like the second or third tier. Sure.
There were two names on the edge ranking ahead of him. I put him ahead of, and every other one I thought was fair. I put him ahead of Aiden Hutchinson. That one was wild to me, but
yeah,
like you know, NFL people are always gonna NFL people are always gonna love Aiden Hutchinson. He's a really good pass rusher, but Josh Allen is not just Josh as good, Allen, if not. Yeah, Josh Hines Allen is just as good in terms of pressure and pressure rate, and then is significantly better in the run game. And then Danielle Hunter was ahead of him, which kind of surprised. I know he had a ton of sacks last year, but man, Josh had more. I don't know if you're using that as your basis. So I think Josh Hines Allen is like a number 6 pass rusher. Probably sounds, I think, a bit more right, because Myles Garrett, I think there's a debate with TJ Watt, but I know every list will have TJ Watt ahead of him. Micah Parsons, I get. Nick Bosa, and Max Crosby. Like, if you want to put most of those guys ahead of Josh Hines Allen, I won't, like, debate it, because, like, those are some really freaking good players. Like, yeah. T.J. Watt's probably the one I would debate. I'd say T.J. Watt is at best fifth in that group. I think he's a little bit of a sack merchant. Josh Hines Allen, I think, though, at least if he's not top five, I think he's at worst six.
There you go. I can't think of any others that I would definitely put in front of him, honestly. Trey Hendrickson? Trey Hendrickson is...
I'd take Hines Allen over Trey Hendrickson, but I agree with you. Actually, I kind of like Trey Hendrickson now that he's openly demanded a trade from the Bungles. So that's actually
going worst his thing is, though, like, maybe you would put him like one or two spots higher, but like we agree that he's like just outside that top five of like truly premier elite edge rushers, and it's definitely in that 5-10 range.
So CBS did go back and revert it. He's at 14. Here are the names ahead of him. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Will Anderson, Brian Burns, Aiden Hutchinson, Khalil Mack, Montez Sweat, Hassan Reddick, Trey Hendrickson, Danielle Hunter, and then the top five guys we just talked about. That list sucks.
The worst part about it is that I feel like they just forgot about Josh Hines Allen. Like, it's not even like, oh, I think that there's 20 edge rushers better than him. They just forgot to include him on.
No. They should have forgot about
him. Yeah, that's even worse, man.
Being a Jaguar.
All right.
That's being a Jaguar, though. Like, we've talked about it. Nobody watches Jaguars games.
No. Like, yeah.
I'll be honest. I do that.
Small market, but yeah, there's a reason. Yeah. All right,
I do that in, like, mock drafts, and, like, I'll get to the end of a for sure mock draft, and, like, it's a top 10 player I completely forgot to mock, and I'll just power through it and be like, no, he's not going in the first. I can sympathize to a degree.
Yeah, sure. All right, the last one we've got is Andre Sisco, who is unranked by CBS in their top 20 safeties, which I think is fair, because I might say he's a top 20 safety in terms of scale, but he did miss a decent chunk of this last season with injuries. So I that's understandable to me. But he did draw an honorable mention by ESPN. Do you happen to have the quote up, John?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now. Which, I think he's closer to the ESPN ranking, personally. Like, I know he missed time, but I think he's at least a, like, bottom half of it, but I think he's top 20. So, NFC coordinator told Jeremy Fowler that Sisco can generate turnovers at an elite level. He'll be a 30-plus career interception guy. He's at 7 career interceptions right now, and that's with his rookie year being wasted completely. So if you're really counting, he's averaging 3.5 interceptions per season he's starting. I could see him becoming a 30 interception guy. I feel like honorable mention's accurate. He's really been the guy, I think, nationally for the Jaguars, has been tagged as the potential breakout guy. And I think it's been to the point where, like, there's so much smoke that even if he has just an okay season, I think he's getting paid by somebody next offseason.
I think so, too. I mean, it makes sense that he's, like, getting tagged as a potential breakout, because he was legitimately putting together, like, a top 5 safety season last year before he ended up getting hurt again. It was, like, week 7 or week 8, I feel like. He, like, pulled a hammy or just had some kind of, like, minor injury and then just wasn't really quite the same the rest of the season, even when he did play. But man, like, the flashes were certainly there for, like, a good 5 or 6 week stretch. And so that's again, like, I think you're right where, like, he probably should have been at the bottom of CBS's list rather than completely left off. But just, like, the fact that he was not available for the entire season plus the small market thing, just I get it. But I will say, like, this, I was steaming yesterday because there is someone that quote tweeted the ESPN article and said, Sisco is, like, the only safety in the league that has Earl Thomas, like, center field range. And, like, Sisco is, like, one of the few, if not the only, college prospects that I really enjoyed watching and then was actually drafted onto the Jaguars. And so I've been a fan of his for a long time. But no one, the only player that you can compare to Earl Thomas is Ed Reed. Like, Earl Thomas was that good. And so like I just gotta slow down the hype there. Like I wouldn't be surprised if Andre Sisco makes the Pro Bowl this season and gets a huge bag from whether it's the Jags or a different team next offseason, but he's not Earl Thomas. Come on.
You reminded me a lot of me when I saw that tweet.
Yeah, just a reaction.
I did, and a few years ago I would have tweeted exactly what you tweeted.
Like
it was obviously an asinine take from an unserious account, but like
just people need to watch
the show. It was funny. You look at the quote retweets of that tweet, one of them is you saying LMFAO, and the other one is a Jags fan going, and who coached Earl Thomas? Chris Richard.
I saw that too. That was a little nugget, honestly, by that Jags account by saying that the Richard moment or the nugget is pretty good. But like half the reason, like I feel like the cover three system was so good in Seattle was just that they were able to play cover three and have the center fielder because Earl Thomas was playing that position. Like when other teams started leaving, or whenever coaches started leaving Seattle and trying to replicate the cover three, like there was a lot of reasons why it didn't work as well elsewhere as it did in Seattle. But I think the number one reason is that there's only one Earl Thomas.
Yeah. Oddly, Josh Evans couldn't do what Earl Thomas could do.
Josh Evans.
I remember they'd taken Evans in like the fifth or sixth round and then being like, we actually got our two favorite safeties in the draft, and Cyprian. That's such good PR.
Come on, be serious.
Yeah. All right. So, you got anything else for us, Gussie?
No. So I think like Sisco should probably be like 15 to 20 range, maybe even 10 to 20 range. But I think so. We're both definitely expecting him to be ranked top 10 at this time next year. Is that fair?
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely fair. I think. If he has the season he's capable of having, that's like, I think, like five or six interceptions and turnovers, if not maybe more generated, I think you'll definitely see him creep up closer to that top 10 next year.
He's kind of the same for me for like Mitch Morse and Brandon Scherff, where like health is like the only question I have with him. If he's fully healthy, then like I think he's going to kick butt. So,
yeah, that's a good point. All right, guess. Got anything else for us?
Think so. My second SB Nation piece should be coming out pretty soon. I'm pretty
sure. There we go.
Look out for that probably early next week. But
hell yeah.
Anything else?
Hell yeah. I'm excited to check that out. Well, we'll be back again next week at some point. It'll be the last podcast before training camp opens. So we'll just talk about some burning questions ahead of training camp. So thank you guys for sticking with us through the dead point of the offseason. Gus, thank you as always for joining me, my friend. We'll be back next week. Make sure you subscribe to us on the Jaguars on SI podcast on YouTube. Give us reviews on Apple and Spotify. Like us on Facebook. Follow Gus Logue. It's Gus _ Logue, correct? There we go.
L-O-G-U-E.
Yeah.
It's called L-O-U-G-E sometimes. I don't get it.
I've told you this before, but my brother-in-law, his last name is Logue. Like the guy my sister married.
Oh yeah,
and it's spelled just like yours. Yeah, so I'm always able to catch it. There you go. But no relation. We're not connected. Me and you. Anyway, so, but remember to like and subscribe. We'll be back next week. Thank you, my friend Gus Logue, Big Cat Country, for joining us. Thank you guys for episode 109 of the Jaguars on SI podcast. Who would have thought? Not me.
Or turn along, baby.
Dude, in like March, I thought this pod. Like I'm still not going to talk about completely what happened in March with like my position and everything, but I thought this pod was going to die in March. So every episode we do, every episode's a gift, Gus.
Ever since like January, I was like, I don't know, but
you're what the right. Hell happened in January?
I feel just like the news of like the SI union or
I completely ignored that.
Okay.
But once March hit, I was worried, buddy. But no, we're good. We're good.
Well, we're through the deep end of the offseason now. Like we got through all these player rankings, and so next week will start to be exciting.
Everybody's got to make it out of the darkness sometime.
For sure.
Toby Keith. Actually, Sting, then Toby Keith.
Okay.
You don't know how either one of those are. Okay. All right. We'll be back next week for 110. Thank you guys, as always, for joining, and I hope you guys have a great one.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.